Hey everybody, and welcome to the Hair Metal Rules Podcast. Today on the show is a good buddy of mine, Mr. Justin Saini from the band Cruella de Vil. I always love talking to Justin. Justin was nice enough to be one of the first people. Actually, you were the first person that was ever on the Hair Metal Rules Podcast.
The guinea pig.
That's back when I was really nervous about everything, and now the podcast is a lot better, and I actually got a YouTube channel now that Justin will be put on. And anyway, he's a good buddy. He's a good man. He works hard. I'm proud of him. Well, welcome to the Hair Metal Rules Podcast, Justin.
Good to be here, Jeremy. Love you to death, man. You're my bro. Love you
I
to death.
appreciate it. Well, you have helped me out so much. And you know, I know you know who Tom Tracy is, the guy that did the was talking to him the other day, and you know, it's great that in the last year, you know, just the people that I have become friends with and very fond of, it's a great community that's been built on Instagram in the last year from just people that have a passion for this music and want to keep it alive and listen to it and thrive off of it. And you're one of the people that's still out there cranking it out, brother.
Oh, hell yeah. You know, that's building a community is one of the first things, you know, that I learned, you know, as a teenager out, you know, on Sunset Strip, just watching all these, you know, older guys or, you know, older kids, what I call the Hollywood kids. You know, they were working in bands and they were promoting, you know, the shows left and right and just, you know, just out there hustling and working and stuff. And, but, you know, as competitive it was, as it was, you know, for the bands, it was still about a huge, just building a community. And that was so fucking right. I miss it so much. It definitely changed my DNA from, completely changed my DNA.
Well, you know, the 80s, like I've said before, there'll never be another era of time as great, in my opinion, as the 80s. And, you know, you made a comment. I talked to Britt Pinella from Black Boy Jungle a couple of weeks ago, and he said the very same thing you just said. You know, he said, you know, I said on the podcast, he said, I was sitting on a brick wall on Sunset, and this guy with big blonde hair walks up to me and says, "Hey, dude, what's your name?" He said, "My name's Britt Pinella." He's like, "Well, I'm Steve Rochelle from the band Tough. You know, you seem like a pretty good guy." And he said, from there on out, they were buddies, inseparable. And, you know, you didn't, you know, that was towards the end of the whole big boom of 80s hair. It was toward, you know, 90, 91. But he said, you know, you just went with each other everywhere you played, and you know, you borrowed each other's gear, and you know, you just went up there and played music, because back then hair was pretty much dying, and you knew you weren't going to get no huge record contract. You were going to get something because it was still playable, but you were more of a united front per se to keep doing that music, you know. Whether it was, you know, it won't be on MTV anymore. That was gone. But I just think it's great just talking to you, you know, from your experience as a youth growing up in that area, and the places you went, the people you saw, what you grew up with. I just think it's great that the more I talk to people, the more I realize it wasn't a really a cutthroat atmosphere. Everybody just wanted to play music and wanted, if you survived, you survived. Good for you. But we're still going to go from club to club. We're still going to play every night and make our hair big or not make our hair big or whatever. We're going to have a good time. We're going to go bar hopping afterwards and get just sloshed. Mm-hmm. We're having fun doing what we're doing.
Yeah, it was you know, because I, you know, everybody, like all the, you know, all the bands pretty much knew each other. But yeah, it was, you know, competitive. I just remember the, you know, they call it the flyer wars, which I'm sure, you know, pretty much every musician that you're going to talk to or will talk to will say it the same, basically say it the same way. basically anything that didn't move got a flyer.
Right.
And it was either with, staple gun or with glue.
Right.
It's funny to, just to think about. But yeah, anything that didn't move got a flyer. And there was, certain bands kind of started it, certain bands, took it to a new level, then some bands kind of perfected it. But it was still like, okay, a band's going to come out and put, 10 flyers on a street pole. Well, about an hour later, another band would come out to put 15 on it over theirs. Another band would come out a couple hours later, put 20 flyers on top of theirs. So yeah, it's just, by the end of the night, if a pole was here, you had flyers sticking out that far.
Right,
It
thick.
was, you just keep getting stacked. It was just, it was pretty cool to witness, all the bands, they're basically just, hand out flyers to you. I'd go back to the Hustler Mansion with, a stack full of flyers, this thick, and I would keep some of them, if the bands looked cool, because
Right.
that was the standard. Because you saw the bands first, as far as on the flyer, before you obviously go see them live. Like, okay, this band looks cool, I'll keep this one. This band looks crap, I'll throw this one away. That's basically just how it was. And but if you're a musician, right, hustling, and another band would, come up and say, give you a flyer, I'm like, yeah, man, I'll come check your, and they throw it
Throw it
away.
away.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's just, but it was, the flyer wars is kind of like where I learned the hustle and to, what makes a good flyer. What grabs people's attention? Is it, is it the color? Is it the graphic? Is it, the photo quality, which meant a lot. You just learn the art of not only making flyers, but you learn, the art of hustling.
Right.
And God, it was so much fun. It was so much fun, dude. I wish you just one fucking night, dude. Just
Yeah.
God,
I would
man.
it would be so great. You're
Yeah.
talking about, the flyer thing. I was talking to Michael Oliveri, the lead singer of Leatherwolf, and he said that, when they were all together down in Orange County, one of the guys in the band was real artistic.
Okay.
And they took pieces of sheet metal and he painted their whole picture, each one of us picture on. They stuck it to a truck. And
Whatever works, man.
they went down Ventura Boulevard wide open, advertising, and one of them came loose and flew off. And they were afraid that it was gonna
Oh,
hit
man.
another car. And
Yeah.
same guy, and said he was on Sunset getting flyers handed out to us before he decided what band he wanted to play in. And there was a
Yeah.
bunch of bands scouting him. And he said he went home and there was a stack of flyers sitting on there by the window that he had got from the clubs. And he said the wind started blowing and it blew the flyers off. And the only one left was a flyer for Leatherwolf. And he said, I think that was a sign. So then he goes and plays in Leatherwolf. So.
Okay, nice.
That's pretty
Nice.
me and the flyers that the flyers and the whole Sunset thing, it's great to hear about things like that. And you walked the strip, you lived it, and I think it's so great. I think it's great that you were a young person that witnessed and experienced that, but now you're a grown man and you have the memories of it, but now
Yeah.
you know what it takes to push and promote, and now you're in the not 2025, and you were just you got an album, right,
Yeah.
that you've been working on, but you still know what it was back in the day, how hard it is to. And I think that's one thing about you. You saw what these bands did. You saw the hustle, like you say, and what it takes to do it. And now in 2025, I mean, you know exactly what to do to push Cruella de Vil to a new limit.
Yeah, I think, a couple things factored into, why I remember it. First of all, I was so young that I technically wasn't allowed to drink.
Right.
And I didn't.
Technically wasn't
Well,
allowed.
I didn't until later when I started playing clubs myself.
Right.
But yeah, basically, because I was, 14, 15, 16 years old when I was, first went out there and saw the and this is 84, 85, 86, when it's fucking crazy. But I was sober. So I remember everything. And just, you know, when you see something as just mind blowing as what it was, I mean, you can't help but be changed by it. You know, because I was, you know, going in between Ohio and Los Angeles. In Ohio, I was in a really, really small town, population maybe 100,000 people at most. It was a decent music scene at the time, but for the most part, I was just in a small town. And then all of a sudden, I go to Los Angeles, 30 million people, Sunset Boulevard, you know, clubs are packed because of that. Sidewalks are packed because of that. The streets are packed. This is before the, you know, be kind of between the LAPD came in, like in the you know, like early 80s, when punk was kind of destroying the neighborhoods, and the early 90s when the riots came in. So it was West Hollywood was an unincorporated city, really no police presence. So I mean, we got away with murder. We can literally do whatever we wanted, and we did. And because I was a teenager, sober, I took this all in, and I learned so much about what to do, what not to do, from watching these older kids do their thing. And yeah, it changed my life.
Well, you've been
But yeah,
working
being
hard. Go ahead.
yeah, I was, you know, just being sober helped because of, you know, if I
Sure.
was, you know, if I was being stupid and, you know, just getting belligerent, I would definitely forget it. There is a saying among, you know, the Sunset Strip scene: if you remember it, you weren't there. That's,
Right.
you'll hear that. But I remember it because I was so young that I hadn't got into that, hadn't gotten into the weeds of, you know, alcohol and, you know, drugs, which eventually, you know, started killing people off. But yeah, just changed my life, dude. Changed it.
Well, you've been working hard. Okay. I think I got too much light here. I don't know. Let me
Okay.
see. A little too bright. I feel like I've got the sun right here in my face. You've been working hard here the last few months, getting your album ready. Tell
Yeah.
me what that experience has been all about. What's
Yeah.
it been like to, are
Well,
you? Who else is in your band, by the way? I see
so
Justin, but
yeah, nobody permanent.
nobody.
So
Okay.
yeah, nobody permanent. So, you know, I've heard people who do like consulting with the music business, they'll often say that, you know, a lot of bands, you know, even going back, but especially now, a lot of these bands are glorified solo projects. And what they mean by that is you have maybe, you know, one, or, you know, if you have four or five people in a band, usually have one, maybe two guys that are doing all the work, you know, doing all promoting, you know, most of the, you know, primary songwriter, basically doing all the stuff themselves. And the other people are just like, you know, either unpaid employees or paid employees, depending on the band situation. So in this Cruella de Vil situation, it is mostly me. I do have the drummer that's kind of doing some things. I have, you know, Jamie Wilshere is doing vocals, which, oh my God, he is badass,
Right.
bad to the fucking bone. We know of, you know, just a little bit of the, you know, same people. As I say, he's from the UK, so he's got a thing to his voice, but it's so funny, it's so rad. It kind of sounds a little emo just because the way he enunciates some words.
Right.
And I don't know, just something about him. It sounds sort of emo, which doesn't suck, but he's got some grit to his voice, but he's got a really clean voice. Yeah, I'm just lucky as shit to have found him. I was out of the music industry for over 10 years, and this goes back to like the mid 2000s to about 2015. I'm 2015, I moved back to Ohio, and some things happened in that 10 years where I didn't play guitar, but I really, really missed it. And I
Right.
missed the, you know, the craft of songwriting and, you know, talking to people and, you know, again, you know, building kind of a community. A couple things happened. 2013, I went out to Los Angeles just for a weekend. I was in a situation and I needed to just kind of get out of things just for a couple of days. Went out to Los Angeles, basically did a month's worth of stuff into 2.5 days. And people were like, you know, hey, I hear you play guitar, I hear you do this thing. where can I find you? I'm like, well, unfortunately, there isn't really much, and I haven't played in a number of years. Kind of felt bad. So 2014, went out to the Monsters of Rock cruise,
Right.
and it was, oh my God, you have to go on one of these, dude. It is
I want to.
complete. It is insanity, but it's like, for the most part, because it's like 80s themed bands,
Sure.
but because the whole drugs and alcohol thing, it's kind of played out. So for the most part, I mean, bands are sober. They sound great. They look great. And on the cruise, I mean, they're on a boat with you. They have nowhere to go. So they
Right, you
actually
can't get
hang,
away from them.
they hang out with you.
Yeah.
And they'll have, like, in the morning, everybody kind of rises and shines, whatever, does their thing, and they go up to the buffet. And literally, I was looking at this breakfast buffet, just pancakes, eggs, bacon, sausage. What should I get? I look to my right, and it's Jake Ealy.
Wow.
And I'm looking at him like, what do you think of the eggs? Just normal conversation.
Yeah.
And he's like, I think I'm just gonna go with pancakes. I'm like, yeah, it's a good choice. It's that kind of like almost like casual conversation that happens on a Monsters of the Rock cruise. Of course, they have Q&As. You can have fans that ask them the, I don't want to say generic questions, but they're definitely questions that me myself wouldn't ask.
Sure.
I'm more like out of the box. I come up with the, unconventional shit. And where they kind of look at me like, huh, never been asked that. And they'll answer. It's just really fucking cool. But again, I was meeting all these people that were either, obviously bands, but either like promoters, club owners that were just, there to have a good time. And I didn't have any product to give
Right.
them, to show them. Got back home from the cruise, and I'm like, man, that was the coolest fucking time. It was so rad, but I didn't have anything to promote. I literally had nothing other than just, my word. I play guitar, and I write really good songs. So about a year later, moved back to Ohio, and I was like, okay, let me get some songs together, finish writing them, record them, give them out to some people just to kind of get a feeler of, do I still have it? Do people like this shit? Does it sound dated? Does it sound modern? What does it sound like? And people were like, dude, this is fucking awesome. We want to hear more. And I'm like, all right. So again, got a new batch of songs, went into a studio, did three more, put them on a CD, which I didn't put out. I have some, which I should give you some, but I don't know, man. It's really raw, and I mean, it sounds
Sure.
okay. I had to sing on all of them, and I'm not a
Right.
fucking singer, dude. I am not a singer, but I had to sing on them because I mean, this was just me. And again, I would take this CD, and I wish I had something to show you, but they're in storage. So I had a CD again, pass these out to some, few people, hey, let me know what you think. And some people kind of goofed on me a little bit just because I had to sing. But for the most part, people are like, dude, these songs are fucking awesome. We're not getting this anymore. We're not getting this kind of just balls to the wall,
Right.
pedal to the metal rock anymore. Like everything's, either like just anything other than this. And it's
Right.
just kind of good time, good time rock and roll, just, singing about having, just basically a good time. And I'm like, okay, let me see if I can take just like the best of the best, come up with a new batch of songs, but rebrand it. And I was going through this list of, I have this notebooks of just notes about the music business and odds and ends stuff. Well, of course, every musician has the list of band names. I had mine. Some of them, you look back on, 20 years later, some of them completely sucked. But one of them was Cruella de Vil. And in the last episode that we did, I kind of got into
Right.
how I came up with that. If people want to know, go back to listen to episode number 5 of Hair Metal Podcast
Yeah.
on Apple. Anyway,
There you
shameless
go.
plug up for you.
No, hey, appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. So I'm like, okay, let me rebrand this. Let me just put it out. And I mean, because it's as a musician, that is your job. You write songs, and regardless of what you think about them, you put them out just to kind of get feedback. And oddly enough, one of the first people that kind of got wind of it was Benny Raindance, who was the rhythm guitar player from Wildside. He was on Facebook. He was on Facebook at the time.
Yeah.
Kind of got wind of it. Heard a couple songs. He's like, dude, this is really good. He's like, you know, kind of one of my backstory. And he was like one of the first supporters of this.
Wow.
Imagine that. Like one of the guys that you looked up to.
Sure, yeah.
In a band that you fucking loved. I loved Wildside, dude. Of course, they're one of the bands. You know, they should have been fucking huge, but
sure.
They came in too late because of the, you know, Capitol Records. They sat on the record for a couple of years. They idiots. But anyways, but yeah, I was like, dude, I saw you live. You guys played at the Alrosa, which, you know, isn't around anymore. That's the place where Dimebag was shot. And I was like, yeah, I saw you guys at the Alrosa back in 92, and you guys, I stood like right in front of you. And I was like, dude, you guys were fucking awesome. You know, your background vocals were cool. Drew, the singer, he was just a fucking beast. They just sounded really good. And they were one of my favorite bands from the LA scene when they were Young Guns. As far as demos that kind of made the circulation back then, they were like their demo tape was one of the best demos as far as quality and songs that I had heard in a long, long time. And I've heard a shit ton. But yeah, just, you know, it was a cool Wildside here is here. This is in Ohio. And I was like, LA is here. These people have no fucking clue what's about to hit them in the fucking face. But I do. It was a raddest time. They put on a great show. And it's just kind of like a just kind of full circle moment to have Benny be one of the first dudes to reach out and like, dude, whatever you're doing, keep fucking doing it, because I hear something that's fucking rad and we haven't heard in a while. We need to. And yeah, I just slowly, very, very slowly, I'm you know, starting to release music that has been unfortunately been delayed and you know, just because of, you know, just production things and you know, producer things. But people hearing the music like, man, we haven't heard this in years. Thank God that there's somebody that's doing this. And I'm like, I'm not trying to sound like anything. I'm just writing from the heart.
Right.
And so the first single, Can You Please Me, is very it's very to the point. It's punk, it's metal, it's in your face, it's, you know, it's very, it basically, it's a very blunt message. And but it's not like not sexist, I hope not anyway.
how somebody interprets it, dude.
Well, just, you know, anything, yeah. any art is basically open to anybody's interpretation.
That is correct.
If I were to paint something, show it to you, you're going to see something. If I'm going to show it to, you know, person X, they might see something else, which is cool.
That's correct.
So again, I have these songs kind of in order. So I had Can You Please Me, which is, you know, which was built to set the tone.
Right.
And so the second single, I wanted to sound a little more like radio friendly or commercial, but still be me.
Sure.
Not be formulated writing where you have, you know, big chorus that sounds kind of cliche or whatever.
Sure.
But I had it all in my head and I had the song written and I found a new producer. His name's Adam. As far as producer wise, he's a genius. Nobody knows of him yet. He's young. He's got a kick-ass band himself. But as far as producer wise, I mean, he pushes me. He critiques me, and thank God I kind of take criticism well. Yeah. Or else I'd be telling him to kiss my ass. But but he pushes me. We've just met like 2024. So I mean, I'm just getting to know him. It's not like I've known him for years. He gets me, I get him, we work well together. So the second single just released last month. 364 St. Cloud. For those people who don't know, let me play catch up. I'll tell the story kind of quick. 364 St. Cloud is a street address in Bel Air, California. And it was the home of my Aunt Althea and Uncle Larry, who at the time were running Hustler magazine.
I kind of thought that all along. Yeah.
Yep. So a lot of memories from that house.
Sure.
This they moved there in 78. After Larry was shot, they moved from here in Columbus out to Los Angeles and rented another house while that was being renovated. They finally moved in. Past residents of that house were actor Errol Flynn and also the songwriting duo Sonny and Cher,
Wow.
which I thought
Nice.
was, I think when I heard that, I was like, yeah, when they bought this house, we saw it for the first time. And my aunt was like, yeah, Sonny and Cher lived here back in the, like a late 60s, early 70s. And I was like, Sonny and Cher was in this house. I like them. And it was just really, as a teenager, just something cool.
Sure.
And so they separated, eventually got divorced. They sold the house. Larry and Althea bought it eventually down the road. But the song itself is a like a love song from me to Los Angeles. And this really hits home because of what's been going on the last couple of days. Again, regardless of when this airs, we're recording this on Thursday, January 8th, and the wildfires have hit Los Angeles in the last 40 hours. So it's still very new, and it's hit home really, really hard. Talk about that in a second. So 364 St. Cloud is basically my love song from me to the city of Los Angeles and Southern California as a whole. It's almost like, say, like if Anne Rice was writing the lyrics. It's kind of dark. It's got a vampire theme to it, but it's about like the long distance relationship, which I think everybody can relate to. Because I, especially in the last 20 years, social media has been such a big thing. I think everybody most of the people in this world now have been in a long distance relationship, admit it or not. And so I think it's something that everybody can kind of relate to, that you're with the person, hang out with them for a couple of days, and then all of a sudden you have to go home.
Right.
You totally vibe with them and you kind of fall in love with them and you can't wait to get back to see them again. That's where the song takes place. In between my first and second visit out to Los Angeles, completely changed my life, but I had to come back to Ohio for school. I eventually came back a second time and Althea completely changed the game in that second visit. But the song it's so good. I mean, it's super well written. The production value is second to none. I will put that I'll put the song and the production against any fucking band's song from any genre. It is so fucking good. And the feedback that I'm getting from people is they're completely mind blown. They're kind of shocked that this kid, from middle of nowhere, Ohio, has kind of risen and put out something that a lot of people really, really like, which means the world. It
Well, I
means
think
the
the
world.
great thing about what you've done getting the album is you can get on your email list, which is great. I mean, it's you send out an email that goes above and beyond what you would expect somebody to send you. I mean, you've had videos on there of what you're doing, the recording process. You've had videos of just getting pissed and about what you're doing at that particular moment, but it's in my opinion, your emails, I felt like I was there. You understand what I'm saying? I was there with you while you were recording this, and it's people think you just go in a studio, you crank something out, and you're gone in 5 minutes. It may happen from time to time, but that's not how it works. I mean, you're going to do it and redo it. You're going to do it till it's right. Because I know you, sir, are a perfectionist. I've learned that about you, and
I
that's
am.
great. That's great. It's not going to stop until I think it's the way it needs to be, and that's what's so, like I said, that's what's great about reading your emails that you would send out about your recording process. He like kind of makes you feel like you're right there. It was like, yeah, he's aggravated and he this didn't work, so we're gonna go with this.
that was the whole point. For those people again who don't know what he's talking about. So through the CorelDeVille site, just CorelDeVille.com, it's CorelDeVille.com. The first thing you see when you go up on the site is it says, welcome to this, CDV Vampires. If you want to join the email list, it's free. It always will be. You basically, it's again, vampire themed. It says, you'll get the news before the blood hits the fan.
Right.
And what I mean by that is you're going to get, and you know this, you're going to get me writing a song. You're going to get me working on lyrics. You're going to get me, when I'm at Adam's studio, doing take after take after take. Now I edit it down because
sure.
Nobody wants to sit through 5 hours of that.
Right.
But you'll get me basically playing guitar, playing, putting down like live tracks.
Yep,
And
that's great.
So you can see the process coming together. So that you say, when you say that you feel like you're in the room, that's the entire point.
Yeah.
Because I want everybody, again, it's about building a community.
Mm-hmm.
Most artists or, Instagram, like influencers or just basically anybody that, I don't want to say it this way because I don't want to upset people who do this, but this is normally something that people would do. They would set up a Patreon to do. And obviously Patreon is a subscription money-based thing
mm-hmm.
to get bonus content. That dude, I'm fine with money. I'm not driven by it. I've been poor. I've been broke. I've been, I wouldn't say rich. I'm doing well. I have a really good paying job. Watch my money. I'm good. I don't, same with the YouTube channel. I don't do it to become monetized,
sure,
to make money.
Right.
I mean, if Google wants to send me a check, cool.
There you go.
But I don't do my content for that. Same thing with CorelDeVille. I mean, if we're going to play shows, it'd be nice to pay for the expenses, but I'm not
mm-hmm.
doing it to make a profit. Being an
sure.
original band, you make no money until, you become fucking Lady Gaga, but,
right.
or Taylor Swift.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, it's just something that I want to give to people who, there's musicians and there's fans and there's just normal people that, this fucking love music that may not know the process of what it's like to put a song together and how it's written, how it's recorded, how it's mixed, how it's mastered, all that stuff. And I just thought it would just be just a really cool fucking thing to give to the fans and the supporters and my friends. Just to give them kind of what it's like. It's always going to be free. I'm never going to charge for it. Just go in there and, basically put your name, email. I don't even think I asked for your name. I just put your name, email
address. Agrees. Yep.
Yeah. You'll get a thing basically just asking you if you want to confirm it. You say, yep. And I'll get it. And I'll just, kind of type in, thanks for signing up. Welcome to the, CDV Vampires. Kind of give like a, updated thing of what's going on. Everybody, that gets everybody that's already signed up or futurely will, they're going to get the link to this episode.
Oh,
it's
wow.
just something it oh yeah
cool.
absolutely the one I think I put it on when we did the Apple podcast, just
mm-hmm.
the word.
Mm-hmm.
It's on there, so people can go on there and check it out
mm-hmm.
anytime. It's just, I don't know, it's just something I just believe in and believe in. I was given a gift
mm-hmm.
of music and being able to write decently and record. Just, I'm kind of humble a little bit. I've been given a gift, and I believe in giving that gift and giving back. So it's just my way of kind of showing people like what it's like to write, record. It's no holds barred. It's raw. You'll see parts come together. I remember for 364 St. Cloud, I told Adam, I was like, I want keyboard in the song. And he was like, well, what do you want it to sound like? I'm like, I don't know. Well, where do you want to put it? I don't know. But I hear it in my head. But I hear it in my head. And so again, camera's rolling. So he's coming up with different samples. I'm like, no, that's not right. No. He comes to something. I'm like, dude, that's it. Save that setting. Save that sound, whatever that is, save it. And so I had kind of like didn't even have like a melody line in my head. But I was like, okay, where do I want this in? And I'm like, okay, chorus makes sense. And so I'm like, da, 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 da. So I kind of played around with the melody line up a little bit. Had to figure out the notes because I can play keyboard, but not very well. So basically I had to go on the keyboard and find the notes. And you didn't see it, but I literally took like pieces of paper and put them on top of the keys. So I knew which ones to
Right. Right.
press.
Now, there's nothing wrong with
That, dude,
that.
that is so like how what did they say? Yeah, what is it they say about the mother of invention is something
Right. Yes.
whatever you know what I'm saying. So
Yes.
I'm like, okay, what do I have to do to find these notes? Like, okay, here's a note that fits the key. Put a piece of tape on it. Find another one. Put a piece of tape on it. So I would just hit these the keys in kind of like a random order,
Right.
and then I was trying to play keyboards, trying to hold the camera at the same time. I'm like, hold on, push pause. I found it. Completely fucking blew my mind. Completely blew my mind right away. Hit record. Holy shit! I found it. I found it. And that's when you saw me go nuts. I'm like, oh
Right.
my God, you're never gonna fucking believe this. And it completely, I don't want to say it completely changed the tone and sound of the song, but it did. It completely added like a couple different layers to it beyond what I had in mind. And it was so fucking cool that I was able to capture this for you guys because I love you guys so fucking much. And yes, I do get emotional because I just do. And it was so fucking awesome to be able to capture that. And you remember that look on my face. I was like, dude, I found it. Oh my God, I'm losing my
See, that's the cool thing about the people that are watching this, that the emails that you send out. I'm sure you'll continue to send the emails out, but
always
just
will.
watching the emails you sent out of the whole recording process, it was a lot of fun to watch. It's a
Okay.
lot of hard work because I know some of it. You were in your house playing playing your guitar. You were here doing this. It was a lot of fun watching the whole thing, come together and just how excited you were when, hey, look what I did. And that's it's great that you include everybody to let people see exactly what you're up to in the process. Not a lot of musicians would take the time to. They're not going to do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm completely unorthodox. I'm out of the box. I am completely unhinged. But fuck it, I love it. I love it. And Alex Kane from LSD, Life, Sex, and Death.
Oh,
Those
yeah.
who don't know him, LSD came out like the early 90s from Los Angeles, but they were completely alternative to the alternative to the alternative. They were so weird. And again, one of the people that kind of reached out eventually that liked what I was doing was Alex Kane. And again, one of my fucking heroes that likes what I'm doing.
Right.
And I was like, fuck yeah. So I'm doing something good.
Doing something right.
But again, he is very unconventional. If you know that band, if you don't, look him up.
Oh,
But
yeah.
he's very unconventional in his approach to playing guitar, in his approach to production, basically in his approach to life. And I'm very much like the same way. So we work well together. And it's just I don't know. I think different, and I can't help it. I don't just the way I grew up, what I was able to see. I'm very visual. It's not really like I want to shock people. I think when they see Cruella de Vil live, I think they'll be shocked because what I have in mind is something that you probably haven't seen from a local band and probably shit. I don't know, probably back in Motley Crue when they were playing the clubs, when they brought a complete show with them. They didn't
Sure.
just have a couple lights and their amps. They brought a whole drum riser and
Right.
candelabras and chainsaws and
That's the way to do it.
It
Hey,
is.
that's
It's a, yeah.
that helped. That sold so many bands' image back in the day. People wanted to see that. People went to see Blackie Lawless throw raw meat out into the, they wanted somebody slinging blood on them or whatever from the stage. That's why people came to the show.
They want to get down. They want to get dirty. They want to get, I mean, if you're like what I think they call it shoegaze, where basically to me that means you're in the crowd, you see three or four or five musicians on stage, and they basically look down and stare at their shoes the entire time. There's no like interaction. To me, there's no energy. Dude, that is fucking boring. If that's what shoegaze is, then I'm definitely not all for it. I'm against
I
that.
had somebody on the show that said that very same thing. He's like, "Well, it went from us to four guys standing on a stage looking down at their feet the whole time while they played. It went from us to that." So, yeah, you're exactly
Dude,
right.
so the previous band I was in, we were based in Cleveland, Ohio, and we're kind of like a glam punk thing. We were kind of it was kind of an odd sort. We were compared to Poison a lot, which, if you know, I'm not the biggest Poison fan. Nothing against them. I like a little dirty and rat in my music. Just different. And their Poison was like a little too nice. But the bass player, he sent me a video from the show. Couldn't tell you when it was. It was probably like early 2000s, maybe. I don't know. We played, he just sent me like a minute video, and we played mostly originals, but we did covers just for the, shits and giggles. But we played Motley Crue's Live Wire. We played this song so fucking fast. It was almost like, for those people who know who the punk band Fear is or was, they play it again, everything very, very fast. And they would take a 2.5 to 3 minute song, scrunch it down to a minute.
Wow.
Because they played it so fast, but they were
Right.
fucking awesome. It was kind of like almost like Fear covering a Motley Crue song, but visually, we're moving around all over the place.
Yeah.
It was like a dogs let out of the kennel for the first time in a month. Nothing against not I don't advocate animal cruelty.
Sure.
Anyways, edit that out. Or put it in, whatever. But yeah, it was like we were like, three or four dogs just let out of the kennel for the first time in a month, and it was just people going, it was fun. And that's what the bands that I grew up listening to, the bands that I loved watching, did that. The bands I didn't like, the bands I didn't watch live, stood still. They
Right.
had nothing. There was no stage show. There was nothing going on to capture my imagination to trip my trigger, so to speak. There was nothing going on. I'm like, dude, this is fucking boring. I mean, they might be the best of musicians, but it's fucking boring. And I will
Sure.
never, ever be boring, ever.
No, that's not, people don't want to see boring. They want to they want to get a they want to get their money's worth. Well, Justin, I know California is close to your heart, and you
It is.
mentioned earlier, it's terrible what's going on in California right now. I like I said, I can't imagine, being have to shelter in place somewhere and not know if my neighborhood is still there, if my house is burnt down. Your house might have survived and not get burnt down, but then you always have idiots that want to go loot houses that they know are vacant, and that makes it that much worse, and the fires are creeping into, places that have been there for a long time, historical places. We're so I know I saw earlier a Sunset Boulevard that well fires burning there. So I know, you being where you're at and having a connection to this for so many years, I know it bothers you what you see.
So before we went live, Jeremy and I had just a chance to talk just for a few minutes, and he asked me how I was doing. So I'll let everybody know. I am in Ohio, Central Ohio. I'm safe. I'm far away from this. But for the last 40 or so hours, ever since this broke, which, basically a couple days ago, I have seen the city that I love, that I ended up writing a song about, 364 St. Cloud, writing a love song from me to Southern California. And when I was putting the lyric video together, it has just my favorite spots, my favorite drinking spots, it was basically my old hangouts. There's some stuff from the Whiskey, there's some stuff from the Rainbow, there's some stuff, just driving down Sunset, driving down Hollywood Boulevard. Just kind of visually, just, and now it's taken on a completely different tone, because these places are still there, but I have more family and friends out there than I do in Ohio. I have probably 13, 14 family members. I haven't really counted, but I'm just guessing 13 or 14 family members that live out there, that have been really affected. But the main thing is everybody's safe. But the people who live in the, either Hollywood, Los Angeles, I have a cousin and her family live in Santa Monica, which is just the town below the Pacific Palisades. They were evacuated, and they were in Riverside, which is more inland, which you would think is okay. But Riverside is just south of one of the places where another fire broke out last night, and or like overnight. And so I reached out to family and just said, hey, check up on my cousin, because she's in
Just
Riverside.
pause 1 second. My wife always texts me when she leaves work. Just hang on 1 second.
Oh, no worries. Yeah, I got the news on, so I'm kind of watching all the.
All right, go ahead. I'll edit. I'll cut that part. Go ahead.
So I have a cousin and her family that live in Santa Monica. They were evacuated yesterday. They took them. They went to Riverside, which is more inland, but you think it's safe. But it just happened to be just south of where another fire broke out late last night. So I again had I've got family checking up. Luckily, everybody is safe and okay. Nobody's been harmed. But unfortunately, they're probably not going to have a lot to go home to.
Right.
This is the one this is the far by far the one the worst fire that I've seen break out, and I've seen them all. I think about 3 years ago or so, they had one that was really, really close to Sunset Boulevard, and it was kind of scary last night when I was watching it. They call it the Sunset Fire, and it's kind of broke out around the Studio City. If you knew Studio City, Burbank area, it is kind of on the edge of the east part of the valley. But if you go south, just a little bit on the freeway, you're in Hollywood.
Right.
And watching the fires hit that area, I got scared to death. I have friends that live in that area,
Okay.
and one of the bass players in a previous band that I played with in the early to mid 90s, his name's John, and he owns a pretty big restaurant that's on the corner of Hollywood and Cahuenga. And that's probably about, I'd say, about 1.5 miles, maybe 2 miles away from where the fires were at last night. Got a hold of John, and I said, please evacuate. He's like, you have no idea. I'm watching the news. And he's like, we're heading out. And it completely completely hits home. I'm not, I don't live there now, but I still have my people. And I've checked up on everybody. Everybody's safe. They had to, again, they had to evacuate. Basically, they were able to, late last night and this morning, they were able to contain the fire, so it didn't go into Hollywood. It was really, really close, though. Really, really close. The winds, as the sun goes down, overnight, the winds die down. So from there, they were able to contain the fires in that area. The area that's been devastated is Pacific Palisades. It's been leveled. It's no longer, for the most part, it's no longer there. Basically, just watching video of people evacuating, just trying to get out of town. As soon as they get the evacuation notice, they're hitting the highways and watching all the people drive from the Hollywood Hills, south onto Hollywood Boulevard. They take a, they take a left, which is going east, to get away from it. And it was like watching traffic on the 405. It just lights everywhere. Just, I mean, there's no place to go. And I'm just crying. I've never seen anything this bad ever. I've been through fires, not close, but I've been through, wildfires have broken out there. I've been through earthquakes, nothing huge. The biggest earthquake in there that I can remember was the Northridge earthquake in January of 94. Luckily, I was here, but that June, I went back out and some things happened. Cool things happened, just things. But the city and the valley were still cut in half. And I've never seen devastation like this. So I posted on all my social media. I posted, on my YouTube channel. Basically, if you're out there, this, this is how you can, if you, and it was like 211LA.org is, you have access to Airbnbs. They're free, and they're free for a week. This there's a musiccares.org, which is for musicians that they can get assistance, whatever is available. Basically, just posting anything that I could find to help people, basically evacuate, find places to go, just anything I can do from 2,000 miles away. I wanted it to do because it hurt so bad.
Well, I mean, just, you live in Ohio now, but I mean, you spent a vast majority of your life in the very state, the very areas that are in distress now. And I think what hurts the most in a situation like that is you're watching television and you're like, I know exactly where that's at. I've been there before. I've eaten there before. I've been to that bar, I've been to that corner store, I mean, but it's hard, I know what I know how you feel. It's like, not comparing apples to apples, oranges, but when the hurricane came through, Western North Carolina here six months ago, I mean, it washed away whole towns that will never, that are gone. And you sit here and you feel helpless, and if I could have got to them, I would have done anything I could to help, and that's what you want. And I know if you could get in your car and drive to California right now, you would, and you would
Absolutely.
do everything you could to help and give everybody the last dime in your pocket. It's because you're a good person. It's because you have a good heart. And I know it bothered. I know it's, I thought it, when I saw the fires. I know you're not in LA anymore, but I think about the people that I've talked to that live out there. Craig Gerber, the guy from KNAC that was on the show, I sent him a text message and they were evacuating his area. He said, luckily, I have a second home that's far enough away from all of this. I just need to get to it. I think about people out there that I've made acquaintances with. And my heart goes out for anybody out there that's going through this and that you don't know when it's gonna end.
It's going to be, I mean, even if, because right now Los Angeles is just, it's basically gray smoke and dark gray smoke. I mean, that's really all you see. And if you might see a glimmer of the sun just for a couple of seconds, but it's like the apocalypse. And it's looking over the forecast for the next 30 days. The reason why this broke out, and let me, for those who don't know, and there's two times a year that I specifically know. It's probably more, I'm sure. There's two times a year where they get the Santa Ana winds that are really, really bad. It's fall, like in September, and right now. Why this is so bad is it started off as a brush fire. But the reason why it's so bad is because the Santa Ana winds are really, really strong. It's a really dry wind. But right now, it's one of the driest winters that Los Angeles, that Southern California has ever had. It is really, really dry. They have not had rain in months. Right now, it's normally like a wet time of year. But it's because it's so dry, you have, the Santa Ana winds kicking up. It just, everything went just like that. You have fires just pop up left and right. But that is the main, it has nothing to do with fucking politics. It's nothing to have to do with who's in office. It has nothing to do with any of that shit that people want to, put a spin on. It has nothing to do with that. Governor of California, there's a lot of people that don't like him. But that has nothing to do with politics. This is about people's fucking lives and their properties. Their lives are now being shattered because of this. I've never seen anything like this ever. It's so bad. Next 30 days, they are not calling for any days of rain. So you'll have early afternoon, mid afternoon is when the winds are the worst. There might be pockets, like in Santa Monica, there might be like a pocket here and there where the wind doesn't kind of pick up, so to speak. It just maybe does this thing. There's pockets like up in the Hollywood Hills where it's really, really strong. Like up in Mulholland, it was really strong. Fires were popping up in there. Before Larry passed, he had a house up in the Hollywood Hills. I can now kind of say where it's at because he's no longer with us, but it's an area called the Bird Streets. And I was watching just to see, because I think his now widow, Liz, as far as I know, she lives in that house. So I was kind of paying attention when they were going up the, Hollywood Hills, kind of showing where the fires were going on, just to see if I saw any streets that looked familiar. They call it the Bird Streets because all the streets are named after birds. Looking for different neighborhoods. It's weird. I know the neighborhoods and I know the streets and the highways in Los Angeles better than I do here in Ohio, and I
In
live here.
Ohio,
It's weird. Like, how do I get across the street to go to like Popeye's Chicken? I don't know. I literally, it's like 2 minutes away and I have to look on my Google map. But if I'm in, if I'm on like, West Hollywood on Sunset, I know exactly which way Rock and Roll Ralph's is. I know where to find a Vons. I know where to write, found, just it's stupid. So when they're showing these maps, I'm kind of looking out like, yeah, I know where this is at. Which way is the wind blowing? Who's in that direction? Who do I need to get a hold of to say, hey, are you safe? Have you evacuated? Just let me know everything's cool. That's all I was doing last night. It was basically just reaching out to all the people that I knew that live, that live out there. Everybody's safe, but man, they're not going to have much to go home to, and that completely breaks my heart. And yeah, like you said, I wish I can go out there and just do anything that I could to help them. I'll take, water from the Pacific Ocean. I'll try to get all the salt out of it and throw it through in a fryer.
Speaking of that,
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be an ignorant person, okay? I know a lot of the, they get helicopters that hold water And I know a lot of the helicopters are grounded because they can't fly. There's so much smoke. But my question is, and I'm not, like I said, I'm not trying to be stupid, but if they can fly through it, Justin, why can't they get water out of the Pacific Ocean to dump on it? Or is that something they do?
They would have, I mean, if it got really, really, really bad, which it is really bad. I mean, if it got to be like Los Angeles is going to be completely level, like
Right.
nothing left. I think they would resort to taking like the salt water.
Sure.
But there, I'm sure it's got to be something, as far as chemicals or whatever, where, and I know people in Florida will say that their beaches and like their beaches are superior to the ones in Southern California. I call bullshit, but I'm biased. but I'm sure there's stuff in the Pacific Ocean water where they would have to take the salt out
I
somehow
got you.
and then use it.
Sure,
That's
sure.
not being a not being well versed in that, I would probably say that is probably the main factor. The thing that was bad last night was in Pacific Palisades, because they basically, I mean, there's power outages everywhere because
Right.
electricity has been shut down, and literally in Pacific Palisades, the hydrants ran out of water. They were trying to put out fires using anything, just tap water, anything that they can do to try to dump on these fires.
Right.
Can you imagine that? The hydrants running out of water. I
Yeah,
mean,
that's.
that's how bad it was there, that the hydrants run out of water.
Yeah, that's.
But
And you
yeah, it's
know,
weird.
when you have a situation like that, as a fireman, I mean, you just, and they basically say, "Look, guys, I mean, we need to move out. We need to move to this area. We have water here and whatnot." So you think about it. I mean, I can't do anything for these people. I can't do anything for these homes. They're just gonna have to burn. That's not a good decision that a fireman has to make. But a fireman's doing his job. He has to, and I guess you just have to. Well, it's something as big as what's going on. I honestly don't think you could ever be prepared fully,
Well,
you 100% prepared for something like that.
I mean, it's almost like because I'm kind of heavy into like economics, nobody can really truly forecast a like a when the stock market crashes. I mean, you might have indicators here and there, but I mean, only a time traveler can really,
Sure.
guess when the stock market is going to crash and when a natural disaster is going to hit the earth. There were I have a I'll just call it a satellite system. I have a satellite system where I can get all the local LA channels anytime I can watch the new up, which is what are, you see my like picture flashing here. That's basically what it is. I'm watching the news. Well, the news is
Sure.
on, I'm not watching it, but that's why. There was a couple of newscasters that they forecasted this maybe a couple months ago. They said, "Hey, winter's coming. Santa Ana winds are going to start kicking up in late December, early January." This is what the I guess what they call the Farmer's Almanac. It says,
Yes.
we've had such a dry fall, we're going to have such a dry winter. Might want to prepare for this because this could turn bad. And watching one of the weather people before we went live on this, he's like, "Yeah, a couple months ago, I forecasted this because I saw Santa Ana winds are going to kick up and it's really, really dry." And they've had, wildfires, basically the last year. And it's, again, almost the ingredients are imperfect for this to happen. So, I mean, they kind of said, "Hey, you might want to, just be on the lookout for something like this." But again, I mean, nothing can for this. Nobody saw this coming. Nobody. And it's just horrific. I mean, I don't want to see it because it's heartbreaking,
Sure.
but I also want to see, I just want to see that people are okay, and
Right.
just make sure people are evacuating, and just make, I don't know.
Well, you know a whole lot more people by far that I know that live there. You're doing the right thing. You say you want to do your part. You're checking on people, dude. That shows you care that, hey, I just want to make sure you're all right. You kind of know, okay, we're evacuating. They're going somewhere safe for the time being, but that's, as someone, there's not a whole lot more you can do, but you're showing people that you care because, hey, Justin texted me checking on me. Man, that means so much to me. I hadn't talked to Justin in 2 years, but he thought enough of me to check on me and make sure I'm okay. That's what you have to do, as a human being with a heart.
And pretty much everybody has had the same as like, when they get to where they need to go, they do reach back out to me, obviously, after they've
Right.
told me that they're
Sure.
okay. A couple hours later, they'll text me back, or send me, like, whatever on Instagram, and say, dude, thank you for checking up on me. It means a lot. And I've told numerous people, I'm like, dude, we have to, it's what humans need to do. Is have more compassion, check up on their people, as they say, and just, we have to look out for each other, especially, and not just the musicians that I know.
Yeah.
They're people, just, just friends,
Right.
that I've gotten to know with the last 20, 30 years, through different situations, like the Monsters of Rock cruise, people that I still keep in touch. It's such an experience. But
Gonna
yeah,
check
people
it
that
out
I've met.
sometime. We'll have to save
Yeah,
up
just,
some money and yeah.
it's expensive.
Oh
We
yeah,
can talk
we
about.
checked into it the other night. I had told Eric, I said, check out and see how much it costs. I was like, yeah, we might have to save up for a couple of years and that be our,
Well,
trip for.
if you're in economics, just, you do have to save for it. Just, put a
Yeah.
certain percentage away, from each paycheck, and put it in an envelope, or, put it in, an
Sure.
investor, or whatever, so it earns some
Right.
interest, or whatever. Kind of entrepreneurial kicks in.
There you go.
But yeah, it is definitely something that you need to save for, because, we don't work to work. We work to experience things
That's correct.
and to do things and
Right.
have an experience. And believe me, that is something that I will never, ever forget. Just
Right.
the random run-ins that I had. Endless. John Corabi, Jeff Blando, Doug Aldrich from, bands
Yeah,
he's been in,
lion. Yeah.
Jakey Lee. That was the year that he was rolling out, Red Dragon Cartel,
Right,
so he
right.
was kind of doing the whole promotion thing. But yeah, they played on the month, they played on the cruise.
You
He
know,
did a
that
couple
band put
things.
out some incredible music, and a lot of people don't
Well,
even realize.
yeah, I mean, Jakey Lee, I mean, he's a really talented guitar player. He had help from, I can't remember, he was the bass player in that band. Name escapes me, but he helped with, Jake with a lot of the production,
Right.
songwriting stuff. So Jake is kind of like, almost like a Warren Demartini type. He'll come up
Yeah.
with, like, really cool riffs, but he'll need somebody else to come in and kind of finish the song for him. Ironically, those two were, from San Diego. But anyways, but yeah, it was just really cool to all the just random people. Sean McNabb from, I used to play with everybody.
Russell Ward's.
Nader from London. I caught up with him, the night
I know
before
you
they had
like.
a.
I know you're. He's one of your.
That's my that is my fucking dude.
Yeah.
This, him and Althea were really close,
Right.
back in the, like, early to mid '80s. Yeah, his London played, a it was called the Rockers Gone Wild pool party before, like, the night before the cruise took off. And it was, like, 9 or 10, like, local bands from out the country. Burning Rain played there, which was Doug Aldrich's band at the time.
Right.
They had London, and then Trickster was the headliner. I didn't see any of Trickster because after London played, I kind of followed Nader. I kind of went into roadie mode, just kind of wanted to make sure he was cool.
Yeah.
Nader, do you need anything? What's up?
Right.
And just kind of helped the band out. I even, dude, I even tore down, I even literally was a roadie. I started helping take down their equipment.
Right.
Then I went up to the
That's
neighbor's
awesome.
room, just make sure he was cool. You need water, what do you need? Just towels, let me know. But yeah, Nader's my dude. Nader, just
Yeah.
he always will be. He means a lot to me, just because of the connection with Althea. So, but yeah, it was just an experience that never forget, ever, ever.
Hopefully one day we'll get to
Yep.
experience it.
Yep.
Well, Justin, what would you like to plug before we
Oh man.
say part our ways?
Yeah. So you can find me on social media because I'm cool like that.
That's right.
Let's see. You can let's see. Just first of all the links to the social media are on the website. It's on the bottom, I think. It's just
Right.
CruellaDeVille.com, CruellaDeVille.com. Everything's there. News, music, merch, all the lyric videos for the first two singles. Everything's there. Links to the social media. Let's see. I'm active on Instagram. It's Cruella.deville.music. I have a personal page, but I do most of the stuff, through the Cruella DeVille IG. Facebook link is on the website. It's just Cruella DeVille. It's pretty cool. I'm on X, but I've only posted like three or four times on there. I still haven't figured that fucking thing out yet. I'm not on TikTok. I'm not that dude. I'm not like a sit there and play guitar, show you how many scales I can play. I'm just not that dude. When I play guitar, I play to write.
Right.
And I don't want to have like that kind of stuff posted on social media. You'll get it through the
Sure.
site
Yeah.
and through the email, but
Right.
it's not something I'm not sit there gonna riff out or whatever, play through mistakes or whatnot. I just don't do that on social media. I'm not on TikTok. But yeah, the site is where all the links are at. So yeah, just find me on there, CruellaDeVille.com. Yeah, you can find me at a club near you.
Dude, you're I'm glad to call you friend. I've known you since, probably, back last year, and you've helped me tremendously and supported me, and I'm just so glad that you took that 10-year break for the simple fact that I think you needed to take it because your heart got back in it, and now
Yeah.
I think if you would have done it 10 years ago, I don't think it would be what it is today. And you've took 10 years to think it out and do it exactly right and exactly the way you want to do it. And I think the 10 years not playing was a blessing because your heart and your mind wanted to start playing music again and doing what you have envisioned and dreamed. Good for you, man.
Yeah, I think I'm doing it now for the right reasons,
Yes.
because I love music. I'm a musician, but I'm a music fan first
Right.
and
Yes.
second. I'm just a huge music junkie. If anybody wants to send me a song to check out, I definitely will. I'm not like an Instagram influencer where if you want me to listen to your song, you have to pay me $50. I'm not none of that
Yeah, that's a
fucking
bunch of
bullshit, dude.
bull.
That sucks. I'm just a huge music fan, and I just happen to be given a gift that I can play guitar and write. But yeah, just I needed that 10 years off. I was burnt out,
Yeah.
broke, not monetarily wise, even though it was a long road. Playing in bands here and there, not really making much money, and just traveling and not making much money and going broke. And but yeah, I was just kind of tired. I just needed to take a break. But yeah, I just have so much more appreciation for the art now. In the break, I made these notebooks just full of like this music that basically lessons that I've learned the hard way.
Right.
I wrote in these notebooks. I mean, it's two notebooks stacked, just stuff, just music, music business stuff. How to run a rehearsal, how to run a show, just anything I could think of that I learned, from the previous 30 years. Not to
Right.
date myself, but I will. 30 years just playing in bands and playing bars and not making any fucking money, and but loving music. I just. It's who I am. That's who I
That's
am. If you
good.
take, if you
I'm
take.
glad you love music, and I'm glad you've experienced what you've experienced, and the stories you have, the memories you have. And I want to see you in a club around here. You know, we have the Ritz in Raleigh down here that Blackie Lawless played at last year. Why don't you? I'd love to see you down there. I finally get to meet you for the first time.
Dude, it'll be dude, I want to go to M3. That's what I want to fucking do. But
Yeah.
I have been making contact with a lot of the, you know, what they call talent buyers, in clubs, kind of like around the region.
Right.
Just collecting information right now, so that when things do, and hope, I mean, this is up to the fans. This is up to you guys. If you guys like the music, tell me. If you guys don't like the music, tell me and I'll shut it down. But if you do like the music and if you do want to see Cruella de Vil live, please let me know, because that's going to get this thing, the whole thing rolling. So yeah, if you do want to see Cruella de Vil live, let me know.
Let me know.
Let me know, because it's up to you guys. You guys are going to tell me if this thing's worthy or not of kicking some ass. So it's
Well,
up to you
Justin and
guys.
I'll be praying for California. You know,
Thank you.
me and my wife, our prayers go out to all the people there, your friends, and you know, just have to think positive, pray hard. Whether you believe in prayer or not, it's entirely up to whoever listens to this. But hey, just pray to who you pray to, and what you believe in, and hopefully, you know, this won't go on much longer, and you know, it can be taken care of, and then people can, you know, start putting their lives back together.
Exactly. Yeah, it's I can't imagine what these people are going through, and my, heaviest thoughts are with all my family and friends. I mean, everybody out there. But
Sure.
yeah, my family and friends. I got room here if anybody needs to crash. So if they
There
need a
you
place
go.
to stay, I got plenty of room.
Well, brother,
So
I love you, and I wish you nothing but luck. I got a cat running around here too. You had another one sitting on your couch. There you go.
this is
And there's
Charlie.
plenty of Cruella De Vil merchandise on your website.
We got three different shirts. We got the towel.
Yeah, the towel, yes.
I just put the keychain, just put the pin on there. What else is on there? Shirts, towel, pin. Yeah, that's good. But yeah, if anybody wants any specific color design or any like specific like graphic on any, we can I can kind of mix and match. It
Right.
is definitely made to order. It's everything is made. It's shipped by me with a, you saw the note.
Sure. Hell
Again,
yeah.
that's how I learned.
There you go. Yep.
But yeah, everything's shipped out by me. If you guys want any specific color design, if you guys want a purple shirt, I can do it. If you want a V-neck, I can do it. Just let me know. Just special instructions. Just let me know if there's any odd thing that you want. I can probably make.
Well, brother, it's been nice talking to you. You take care of
Thanks, Bob.
yourself.
Nice talking to you too. You take
Just
care.
what I mean, it ain't like I'm gonna say goodbye to you and I won't talk to you again. I'll probably talk to you in 5 minutes on Instagram. But
Probably, yeah.
anyway,
Give me buzz after this.
I loved it, brother. You take care of yourself,
Love
man.
you
Good
too.
luck, and good luck this year. And like I say, I wanna see your name on a marquee in North Carolina soon.
Fuck yes. 2025 is going to be a very, very loud year. Very
There you
loud.
go. Take care, brother.
You too. Take
All
care.
right, later.
Later.